Let's go around the NFL. I'm Luke Morrow in for Reggie alongside John Lopez and Figgy Fig here on In the Loop. You as well. You can always text the show 713-572-4610. Let's go around the NFL. Hey, it's never too early to start looking ahead. Do the Texans already get some good news for one of their early opponents? They play the Buccaneers week 2 home opener, and the Bucs announced that their all-pro left tackle Tristan Wirfs is going to start the season on the IR. He underwent surgery on his right knee yesterday and will miss the start of the season. So for those Texans pass rushers, you start to, you know, lick your lips a little bit if you look ahead for that Game 2 matchup here with the home crowd nonetheless, which could help impact that Buccaneers offensive line. But as we look ahead to the 2025 season, a little bit of a break or some good news for the Texans when looking at their early opponents.
Hey, man, I think it's a big break. Remind me who the Texans rush ends are again. Do we remember their names? Will Anderson. Yeah.
Some guys you might have heard of before.
Some guy named Daniil.
Yeah. No, I think that's very big. I mean, I know that's a home game, the home opener. You're feeling pretty good.
Monday night? Is that Monday night?
That is the Monday night game.
Yeah.
That is the Monday night game. So, that's to me, that's big news. For July 9th, it's huge news.
Yeah, they better show up and show out that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun environment. Going to make it tough on that offensive line, and now they're missing their best. We assume they're going to be missing their best offensive lineman in that matchup against the Texans.
Mm-hmm.
Get after Baker Mayfield. Get after that quarterback. Hey, Bleacher Report's Gary Davenport, speaking of the Texans, he called Christian Kirk the most overpaid player in the league for his position. Obviously, Kirk just came over to the Texans this offseason, and part of the problem has been the injuries in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But what were your thoughts on Davenport's harsh criticism or harsh phrasing on Kirk?
I actually don't think it's a bad description of what he does, of what he is with this squad, given the injuries. But as he put in there, you know, the problem is, you know, he's just got 1,166 yards the past two seasons combined, and he's missed 14 games over those two seasons. So I think it's as simple as just stay healthy. To me, Christian Kirk is one of the – I don't even know if it's even low-key. Most people know this. But really one of the most important players on the team when it comes to health. Because as much as you've got, you know, Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel and you have high hopes, they're still rookies. You know, they're still guys that are going to have their ups and downs, et cetera. And, you know, you got Nico out there. Stay healthy, 15, 16, maybe 17 games, Christian Kirk. And then I don't think he'll be considered the most overpaid, but I don't think it's unfair at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I think looking back at the contract from the Jaguars or looking at the past, you can certainly make that case. Because he was, when he signed that contract originally with the Jaguars, he was one of the higher paid. He was like the, I think top.
Second.
Yeah, at the time, I think so. Right.
He was the second most.
And then I know like even 2 years ago, he got paid like the 14th most of any wide receiver. So certainly when you look at the amount of money the Jaguars paid him and the amount of production they got, you could make a case that he certainly was one of, if not the most overpaid wide receivers of the last couple years. Moving forward into this year, it does come down to health, and we'll see. And if he's healthy, and he, I think, could be very productive with C.J. Stroud, then it's a trade that certainly is worth it for the Texans and money well spent. But I agree with your point, and that's one of the things I've been saying all offseason that concerns me with this offense specifically, but that wide receiver room is there's just a wide variance. If everything works out well, this could be a really good wide receiving group with Christian Kirk as your number two if he's healthy all year, if Nico stays healthy, and then you get these rookies that hit the ground running.
Yeah.
On the flip side, if the rookies are a little slow to develop, I mean, they weren't first-round picks, and if Kirk does have more injuries like the last couple of years, then you're looking around, and it's like, man, this is a mash unit. We don't have a whole lot of depth, kind of like the parts of last season, and that's where I get concerned with this offense. So, yeah, I think Kirk is huge for this offense just to stay healthy. But to the point of Gary Davenport, I think if you're looking the last couple of years, absolutely you can make the case he's one of the
highest. Now, his first year, he was outstanding.
Yeah, he was.
He was worth every penny. Somewhat of a surprise because, as you noted, like when he signed that contract with Tampa, with Jacksonville, initially we were like, wow, that's a lot for Christian Kirk.
Yep.
And then he backed it up. Then he backed it up with a really good season. Then the injuries hit. And kind of what you're talking about, we know what Nico's going to be. We know Nico's going to be a superstar. I think I saw some odds today. third best odds to lead the league in touchdowns.
Oh, wow.
So we know what he's going to be. Jaden Higgins, rookie second rounder. High hopes, but he's a rookie second rounder. You know, obviously Tank Dell's out. John Metchie, what's your confidence level in that? Xavier Hutchinson, what's your confidence level in that? You brought in Braxton Berrios. Okay, special teams guy, who knows? Justin Watson, who knows? And then Jalen Knoll, a third-round rookie. So Christian Kirk is, like, crucial to the wide receiver room.
Yeah, yeah, he sure is. So he's got to stay healthy. It's been a problem the last couple of years. And keep your fingers crossed. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
Kirk Cousins said he felt misled by the Falcons drafting Michael Penix Jr. So they came out with the trailer. I don't know if it's actually been released. It was the second season of the quarterback series on Netflix. But they came out with some of the clips. It includes Joe Burrow, Kirk Cousins, and honestly, I forget the third quarterback. But Kirk is on it again. Oh, I think maybe it's Jared Goff. Anyways, Kirk Cousins. Okay, yeah. Kirk Cousins is on it again, and in one of the clips he was talking about that and saying, I would have stayed in Minnesota if I knew the Falcons were going to do this, because Minnesota was the same situation where they were going to draft a young quarterback. That's why Kirk wanted out. He goes to Atlanta. They do the same thing. It's like, why did I leave? I would have just kept my family in Minnesota. We were happy there to be a backup to a young quarterback like I'm doing in Atlanta right now.
Or help him along and be a starter to start the year as he was in Atlanta. He says he felt deceived. Because he was misled is what is the word he used. He was misled.
We all was misled.
Everybody was misled. You know, at some point, do you think he's going to be a quarterback in Atlanta all year long?
No. Oh, who? Kirk Cousins? Yeah. No.
I didn't think he was this time. Yeah. I'm shocked they're actually keeping him around.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't see it happening. It's the recipe. It's a recipe for disaster. Because Penix, if he struggles, and I know they have high hopes for him and he played okay, then all of a sudden it's going to go the other way. And Kirk Cousins, it's just a mess.
Yeah.
It's just a mess.
Yeah, it is. I think if I remember correctly, there was some sort of salary cap implications of even if it was like a trade to keep them, you know, beyond that June 1st deadline. But now that we're into the summer, we'll see how long this lingers on. And now Kirk Cousins is actually kind of talking. He's a guy that doesn't ruffle feathers, but he's been kind of public with this.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you don't want your backup quarterback to be a distraction or causing any problems. And Kirk Cousins has never done that, but you know, maybe it becomes a problem in Atlanta. This is one of the reasons, though, why I always say I don't get why the NFL does free agency before the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Because then the Falcons are like, well, we don't really know how the draft's going to play out. We need a quarterback, so let's get Kirk Cousins. They do. Then you get to the draft, and it's like, oh, Michael Penix is available. Yeah. We like him. Let's draft him. Similar to what happened with the Seahawks when they signed Matt Flynn, and then you draft Russell Wilson, and then he shows out. That's a little different because he wasn't a first-round pick. But still, you know, if you have the draft first, the Falcons, Kirk, he wouldn't be in this situation. They would have just taken Penix, and we don't need you, Kirk. I wish the NFL put the draft before free agency.
I could see the point on both sides of that because you want to be able to establish some sort of roster going into the draft as well. But I keep going back to draft night. Remember when they drafted Penix and the GM is talking to the owner, Blank? He's going, listen.
Arthur Blank. Yeah, his hands on his hips.
He's like, listen.
All up in his grill, man.
I'm playing chess here now. I'm playing chess here. And Arthur Blank was looking at him like, what the hell did you do? Like, you drafted Michael Penix, number 8?
Yeah, no, that was wild. I did not see that. I thought he was going to be in the back of the first round, maybe second or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? That might go down as a wild first round, man.
And then, you know, on top of that, even if you say, okay, I get it, you're still on the hook for $180 million.
I understand, you know, getting the court. Like, I mean, it's your opinion if you feel like they reached for him or not.
Yeah.
But you just signed a quarterback for $100
million,
man.
$180
million. And you take him in the first round?
Yeah.
I know. By the way, speaking of this quarterback show, are you guys in? I did not watch the first season. I think I watched part of the first episode, and I was like, whatever. Are you guys into it? Will you check out the quarterback season 2 on Netflix?
I probably will handle it the way I did last year, in and out, bits and pieces. If I see something kind of trending, I'm like, oh, I want to see that, you know, that kind of thing.
I did see something that was kind of trending a little bit, Joe Burrow.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Where he was just going off on the offensive line.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
I was to the point, I'm like, dang.
What are we doing?
Yeah, he was. I'm like, man, I wonder. I hope CJ don't ever get to that point where you could tell Joe Burrow want to win.
Yeah.
But he was just ripping them apart, man.
That's interesting you say that because I heard on the drive yesterday they were actually pointing to that clip of saying we want CJ to be more like this. like Joe Burrow.
So he just doesn't want the line to be that bad.
Yeah. Well, Yeah.
No, I think if the line is that bad, he should express how he feel about and kind of rile people up a little bit. Yeah, right. But I just hope it don't get to that point.
Yeah, where he has to.
Where just the mental mistakes like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been my concern with the Texans. You know, I don't want to follow that same path of the Bengals here in recent years. Speaking of Joe Burrow, I thought you were going to reference, Figgy, that as part of this series, it includes that home robbery of Joe Burrow that occurred last year, which was kind of an awkward situation because there was a woman there who called the cops who was not his longtime girlfriend, and it was a whole thing. I guess that's going to be, at least part of it is going to be included into this series. If so, I'll check that out because, as I said yesterday, I love to rubberneck drama.
Yeah.
But Joe Burrow, on a clip I saw, he said in the video, like, I'm probably going to have to move now because people are going to know where I live. Like, they documented the robbery, the house and everything. And to my knowledge, I don't think he has moved. So my question being, if you're Joe Burrow, after this documentary comes out, are you moving houses so that nobody can try to figure out where you live?
I think I would.
Yeah, I wouldn't take any chance. Now, was it a good house? Like, was it like a really big old house that
I don't even think it matters.
Yeah.
There's some crazies out there,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, no, I would be very upset, especially if I put a lot of money into this house.
I don't know how upset I would be because I get it. You know, that's public record. It was a burglary, et cetera. It's going to be out there. My thing is people are nuts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you either got to beef up that security.
Yeah.
Or try to move somewhere else. But if that's my house and I put all this money into this house, I ain't about to keep jumping ship to ship because somebody find out where I stay.
Was it J.J. Watt that paid for a gated entry in his neighborhood here when he his first house here, you know, people kind of found out where he was. And they were stopping by for autographs and stuff. So rather than move, he paid for a gated entry in the neighborhood.
Oh, that for the whole brilliant. Neighborhood?
Yeah.
I
think it was JJ that did that.
That's cool.
I thought that, like a little guardhouse and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was.
I'm surprised River Oaks ain't got that.
Yeah.
Because River Oaks, I feel like, is wide open. Yeah.
I was going to say, that's the crazy thing about Houston, that I was with somebody, we went down the road, and he's just like, oh, that's where so-and-so lives? Yeah. That's where so-and-so... I was like, oh my gosh, like I could just walk up to their front door.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, in all these other cities I've been in, like it's more exclusive. You don't know where they live, and if you do, it's a little harder to access these really rich or famous people.
I will say, River Oaks, each house has a lot of gates, you know, and brick walls.
Yeah,
and
they have a lot. I know Busby got Tony Busby got like an actual security guard on the clock in his yard.
Well, you can do that.
Yeah, but it's funny because I was at the Menares house at one time, and
excuse me,
it was one of the Christmas parties and so like.
Oh, excuse me, it wasn't that big. I was just invited to their Christmas party.
I just kind of crashed a little bit. But I guess they have a bus there where they do a tour around the River Oaks and all that stuff, and they get on this loud ass speaker. And there's the owners of the Houston Texans house.
I would hate that.
And she was just rolling her eyes. She's like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I would hate that. Yeah, if I'm Joe Burrow, I'm moving. I don't want anybody, if I'm of that status, I don't want anyone knowing where I live. You never know who out there will do something crazy. He also said after that robbery, it changed his mind. He didn't want to buy that Batmobile, if you remember that story.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
Yeah, he said he doesn't want to buy that anymore. Maybe similar reasons.
It do kind of make you think a little bit.
It does.
Because, like, I've been robbed before and all that stuff, and it make you go around, especially in cars and stuff like that. Like, I refuse to put any sound system or extra speakers and all that stuff in my car just because I don't want nobody to break in my car or all that stuff.
Yeah.
It kind of make you not want to be too flashy now.
For sure. I think I'd be that way. Like if I was ever a millionaire, I think I would not be that. I don't want people to know I have money so that they don't come after me or try to rob my house. I'd have a nice home, but a modest home. You know, I wouldn't drive some extremely fancy car. You don't want to put that target on your back.
Yeah.
It's a problem I'll never have to worry about.
Don't say that. Don't say that.
Drake May just got married. We talked about Deshaun Watson's marriage yesterday and those expensive wedding rings. The last story I wanted to get to here is Drake May just got married, and I thought it was a really cool story because him and his wife, they donated all of their wedding gifts to those affected by the flooding going on in North Carolina. Admittedly, I did not know this was a thing until this story, and then I saw a video on Twitter of the floods that looked really bad in North Carolina. So I thought that was a cool thing. Obviously, Drake May, you have that NFL contract. They donated, they're donating all their gifts or the money that they made off the wedding to those affected in North Carolina.
If it's the money, awesome. But I did kind of laugh when I saw this. Can you imagine some poor soul, you know, in North Carolina in a flooded house?
Got a toaster.
They get like an espresso machine. You know, like, what are they going to do with that? Like, here's our waffle maker. You know, what do we just sell it?
Yeah. I'm sure it's probably gift cards and stuff like that.
That's a fair point. I didn't think about it. I think it's true. It's a nice idea. It might not be, you know, the best execution, the best in practice. By the way, where are you guys on the wedding gifts? Because I always do money. And if I ever do get married, like, I just want money. What are your thoughts? Do you prefer to just give someone money when they get married, or do you get a gift off the registry?
Yeah, money. I will give them a gift, some type of gift card or something like that. My wife is more the like a craft type of person.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm.
So she'll make something that say Mr. or Mrs. whatever. Mm-hmm. It'd be coasters or something.
I'm glad you asked this. I always go, not always, but most of the time I go off the registry.
Uh-huh.
And I get something that they can actually use and will use a lot. And we'll think of you that you thought about it enough to get this gift. I get like a tool bag filled with tools, because that's one of the things, like when you get married, or a ladder. A ladder is a great wedding.
I need to
gift.
Get one as
I'm telling
we speak.
You, a ladder is a great, or big step stool or something. You use that all the time.
Yeah, you don't realize how much you need it.
Nobody puts that stuff on their wedding registry.
Yeah, you don't never realize you need it until you need it.
That's a good one. I like that. Mm-hmm. That's true. The first time I moved out on my own into an apartment, I think my father got me a toolbox. It's like, you're going to need this, even though I was just in an apartment. It is a thoughtful gift. Certainly, the gifts off the registry are more thoughtful. I guess I'm just more lazy. I'm just like, okay, here's the money. I think one time I even just Venmo'd somebody. Here you go.
That's a mailing it in right there.
Yeah, happy wedding. Hey, what are the greatest moments in Texans history? And should one be a top 25 moment of the last 25 years in the NFL? We'll talk about it next in the loop. What's the greatest moment in Texans history? And does it belong in the top 25 best moments of the NFL of the last 25 years? I'm Luke Morrow in for Reggie alongside John Lopez and Figgy Fig. I did like the one text that came in, just the visual. We were talking about wedding gifts and the idea of you walking into the church just with the ladder.
I should have it wrapped. Gee, I wonder what that is.
Let's put a bow on it.
Yeah, I wonder what that is.
Yeah.
No, you send it. You send it to him. Although I think it'd be kind of cool to come in with a ladder over your shoulder.
That's badass. Hey, get the ladder out the trunk.
Yeah. Hey, what's the greatest moment in Texans history? So CBS Sports put out the 25 best moments of the last 25 years for the NFL. They also did 7 honorable mentions. So that's 32 total moments of the last 25 years. Not one included the Texans. And that's not even the Texans doing something positive. None of them was even a team doing something against the Texans, right? They're not involved in any of these 32 games, the 32 most memorable moments or games the last 25 years. So I guess the first question we have to ask is, what is the most memorable or what is the greatest moment in Texans history? And then should it be somewhere on this list of top 32?
You know what's funny is I saw this list, and we are in 25th anniversary era, you know, here, because obviously 2025, et cetera, Texans have been around for most of those 25 years now. And I'm like, I kind of felt like bummed, like not one, not even an honorable mention.
I know.
Or like Luke said, like not the other team against the Texans.
Yes. Yes.
That would have hurt a little more, but damn, we ain't even in the picture.
Here's the thing. I mean, we know this franchise has had some moments, but none that would rank even the honorable. By the way, I'll give you some of them here, not all 25 and all the honorable mentions, but it did get me thinking, like, is that reflective of just how much we maybe overstate how good this organization has been for 25? It's had its 2011, 2012 years. It's had, you know, a year here and there with Deshaun Watson. It had, you know, obviously the last couple of years, year before last, especially with CJ Stroud. It hasn't done much in terms of like memorable NFL stuff.
I know.
That's sad to me.
It is.
That's like really sad.
I had the same thought when I saw this list. I said, oh, let's see. You know, it's always I'm a big reminiscing nostalgia guy. Let's see what Texans moments are on here. And then I scrolled through and I was like, oh, wait a minute.
None.
Not a single one. And I said, okay, well, let's see if any of these happen against the nothing like that. Texans, no mention, top 32 moments. That was my reaction. I was like, oh, that is kind of sad. You could talk about the last 25 years of the NFL, the biggest moments, and you don't need to include the Texans to have that conversation.
Yeah, and then I started going through in my mind, and I know our texters and listeners on YouTube and Twitch are going to help me out here, just some that popped into mind. And I started to realize, Luke, that wouldn't be a top 25 moment. It's a top moment here.
Right.
The one that jumped immediately to mind is the J.J. Watt pick six against the Bengals. Is that a top 25 or even an honorable mention in the last 25 years in the NFL?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
And just to provide some context in case people are curious, like, well, what is it up against? I'll just give you the honorable mentions because we'll keep the bar low. Like, can they at least get in the honorable mentions? The honorable mentions they listed, yeah, you know what? This first one's not great either. Justin Jefferson's one-handed catch against the Bills in 2023, if you remember that, it was like 4th and 25. He makes that great catch. The Vikings end up winning that game. Great catch, comeback win, but it was just a regular season game. I'm actually surprised that's on the list. Then you have DeMar Hamlin's return, the Saints' surprise onside kick in the Super Bowl in 2010, Teddy Bruschi's return after he had a stroke in 2005, 4th and 26 for the Eagles in 2003 in the playoffs where McNabb converted to, Freddie Mitchell, I believe, 2001 Jim Morris playoffs, and then Antonio Freeman's miraculous catch on Monday Night Football against the Vikings in 2000. Those are the honorable mentions. Now that I actually read them out loud, a couple of those, I don't know if they're that great. But with that said, I don't think the J.J. Watt one would make
it. Yeah, I'm kind of curious because when they put the Justin Jefferson, I know that was probably more on the line with that.
Yeah.
But a DeAndre Hopkins catch didn't make the list at all? Some crazy catch?
It's funny you say that because one that I thought maybe in terms of just entertainment value and wow factor was Hopkins against the Cowboys here when he was doing the whoop, whoop.
The circle, know, yeah, circle, yeah. Circle.
Circle, circle, circle. That one might have made the list, but let me go through. I'll tell you 25. Number 25 on the list, and tell me if Hopkins' play would have beat this as the number 25 most memorable play in the last 25 years in the NFL. It's Saquon Barkley's backward leap, obviously everybody knows against Jacksonville.
Yeah.
I don't think Hop would beat that.
Yeah.
I guess not. That was memorable. Yeah. We're talking most memorable. And, I mean, that was a big, big play.
And that's not really being fans of these teams. Yeah. Remember that.
Right. That's true. Whereas non-Texans fans, I don't think remember these moments.
How many non-Texans fans or somebody that's over the other side of the country.
Now, it was a prime time game.
Yeah.
So that helps.
Yeah, but who else outside of us remember the J.J. Watt pick six?
Right. Number 24 was Tim Tebow to Demaryius Thomas.
That is
It beats that one.
No, yeah. I remember where I was watching that game. That was a big moment.
That was to beat Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah. 23 was the 13-second drive, the Chiefs. You can't give them 13 seconds. You can't beat that one.
No, I think 23 might even be too low for that one.
Yeah, it might be. And then there's some others. I'll skip ahead. Miracle at the Meadowlands in 2010. DeShaun Jackson's walk-off against the Giants.
Yeah. Yeah, on that punt return.
Mm-hmm. Some of the other ones here, Tracy Porter's pick six, 2009 New Orleans Saints, after Hurricane Katrina and all that, Tracy Porter gets that pick six. I don't think it beats that one.
No.
Minneapolis Miracle is number 15.
Yeah, certainly not.
So they doesn't beat that one. That should be higher, shouldn't it?
I think that should be higher.
That should definitely be higher. Well, let's go to the top 10, and see if any of these, I doubt it, but if any of these might be sort of susceptible here. Aaron Rodgers, Hail Mary against the Cardinals. Doesn't beat that one.
No.
Number 9, Philly Special.
Oh, yeah.
That should be top 5, I would think. 8 was the Music City Miracle. Frank Wycheck, Kevin Dyson.
Oh, man.
Wow, what are the top 7?
Man.
7 was 1 yard short in the Super Bowl.
Yes, of course.
Steve McNair. Again, Kevin Dyson, wasn't it? I think it was Kevin Dyson. Number 6, shout out to Jack Easterby, Malcolm Butler's goal line pick six. So you can't beat that. Santonio Holmes, game winner in 2009, Super Bowl, Steelers, Cardinals, of course. James Harrison's pick six is number four. Also in the same game, by the way. The Beast Mode was number three.
Yeah. I think that one's a little, always is a little overrated, but it is certainly a, you know, top 25, sure.
It was iconic.
Yeah, it was. You know, it was very memorable. I'll give him that. Yep.
Number two is Brady down 28-3.
Of course.
Right here. And then number one, see if y'all can guess. See if y'all can guess the number one most memorable play of the last 25 years in the NFL.
I cheated. I saw it, so I won't say anything, but I think it does make sense.
Really?
Yeah, I thought so. I think it's the right
thing. Is it something Patriots?
Yeah.
Tom Brady?
Yes, in a roundabout way. That's a big hint. The helmet catch.
Oh, David Tyree.
Tyree, that's right.
Yeah.
I think that I would say that's number one. It was just a, such a ridiculous play. It's the undefeated Patriots that helped the Giants go down and beat them in the Super Bowl. I think that is the most memorable.
But I'm kind of like depressed, man. Like the Texans haven't done nothing.
So is this most memorable play?
Yeah.
Because
or moment is what they're
or
calling.
Moment. Yeah. I mean, I ain't trying to be a jerk or nothing, but I feel like the Andre Johnson and Courtland Finnegan.
Oh, you know what? I hadn't thought of that.
That might be the best memorable moment in Texans history. Because everybody remember that moment.
Yeah.
You could be in Idaho somewhere. If you mention Andre Johnson, they're going to go back to that moment.
That might be number one, at least of the Texans moments.
That's the only one I thought of. And we got that's the one that has been texted in the most as well. And I remember having the conversation a while ago with Sean Bajani on these airwaves because I've lived in multiple states and I'm not from Houston originally. And he said, like, when people think of Andre Johnson outside of Houston, what would you say is the number one memory? And I said, yeah, that fight.
Yeah.
For sure. It's not even about the playing career. And he was surprised. But, yeah, I think that would be the number one on the Texans list. Does that crack the top 32 moments of the last 25 years in the NFL? I don't know.
Yeah.
But that might have the best chance to do it. Somebody did reference that 28-3, that being the top Texans moment.
Because it was in the stadium?
Yeah. That came in on the text line. A few people said Deshaun Watson, that's a saga, is the most memorable Texans thing.
Yeah. Some people might disagree with that because of the off-the-field stuff. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think also if we're talking memorable, I mean in a bad way, but if you ask people outside of Houston about the Texans, that might be the first thing they bring up is the whole Deshaun Watson fiasco.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Yeah. And then one text did say, 281 said, not a single AFC championship game or Super Bowl appearance. You have to advance in the playoffs for things to matter. A lot of these were play, you know, were Super Bowl or high leverage game situations.
Yeah, that's definitely a factor.
That's fair. And then, yeah, a few people did say the J.J. Watt pick six. So that would be the other one, I guess. Hey, what's popping? I'll let you know when we come back, including something that just happened in baseball for the first time in, I think, like 100 years. It happened last night. I'll let you know what that was. We'll do it next in the loop. What's popping on this Wednesday? I'll let you know here on In the Loop. I'm Luke Morrow in for Reggie alongside John Lopez and Figgy Fig. You can always text the show 713-572-4610. They've announced three injury replacements for the AL for the All-Star game. None of them were Astros. So still waiting on maybe Fromber getting in there as he probably deserves. Even Isak Paredes, you can make a really strong case for. Although Alex Bregman got replaced at third base.
That's the one that bothered me.
And they didn't choose Paredes.
Yeah, they went with Junior Caminero, who's having an incredible year, no doubt about it.
Who gives a damn about him, man?
Junior Caminero. Who cares about Junior Caminero? So not looking great for Paredes, huh?
No. Yeah, I don't think so. I think that was his chance to get it. And at this point also, if you're not the next guy up, like, do you want to be, at what point do you just say, like, don't worry about it?
Like
do you want to be
sixth pro bowler?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Do you want to be plan D? Like, forget it. I'll take the days off.
Yeah, just give me the time off, man. Yeah.
You've already scheduled your vacation. They all schedule those afternoon games on the last day before All-Star so they can take those flights right out of the ballpark.
That's like the office leaving early at noon.
Yeah, I kind of felt bad for Isak, but I understood it. Caminero is really good, even though we don't care. Fromber and Brian Abreu might have a shot. They might have a shot because the only pitchers that have come in as injury replacements and such are in the National League. I'm looking at it right now. Andrew Abbott from the Reds was added. Padres closer Robert Suarez was added for as an injury replacement. So I think Fromber and Abreu might be able to make it.
Yeah, I mean, Fromber deserves it. It's tough. There's a lot of good pitchers in the AL. I talked about this Monday with Chris Partee. You have to have someone from every team. So mm-hmm. that's why Fromber got bumped for the Smith from the White Sox. Mm-hmm. He should be there, and we'll see what happens. You know, a lot of times, as you know, what happens is we get closer and these guys pitch over the weekend or whatever, you know, right before the All-Star game, and then like, I'm not going to be able to pitch anyways. Someone else takes the spot. Or an injury might happen. So there's still a chance. Fromber deserves to be there. We'll see if he finds his way onto it. I do, by the way, love the fact that Alex Bregman, this is his first All-Star appearance since 2019, and it comes in a season where he hasn't played in like 2 months, and that's when he goes to the All-Star game finally.
Yeah.
He was having a great year, but, you know.
He's not playing.
Yeah, he hasn't played in months, and he finally got selected. So anyways, we'll see if Fromber can make his way to the All-Star game next week in Atlanta. Or even Paredes or any other Astro.
Mm-hmm.
Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark took a shot at the SEC and the Big Ten. He said he prefers the 5+11 format for a future 16-team playoff in college football. And as he said, we have the responsibility to do what's right for college football, not what's right for one or two or more conferences, is what he said at the Big 12 Media Days. He thinks the 5-11 is fair. As he said, earn it on the field instead of, you know, just making sure we reserve spots for these big conferences.
Yeah.
What did you think about his comments?
Cool story. I thought it was a cool story. But keep in mind, you know, this is going to happen not this coming season, but next year. And they have a $7.8 billion contract kicking in between ESPN and college football, and ESPN is very much tied in with the SEC and the Big Ten. It's just not going to – it's the way it's going to happen is the way the SEC and the Big Ten want it.
Yep.
Period. I don't know how you feel on this. We haven't really talked about it. I don't mind the 5+11. I feel like, you know, give the conference – every conference champion in the Big Five, so to speak, a place, but don't guarantee them a home game or a top seeding.
Yeah, agreed.
I don't mind that, but I don't think that's the way it's going to work out. I think the Big Ten's going to get too guaranteed, the SEC's going to get too guaranteed, and then it's going to come down to the rankings. And it could well be, you know, not the Big Five, you know, or certainly getting a place in there, but playing on the road, maybe a first-round game, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm with you. You can fight this all you want, and it's a noble effort here by the Big 12 commissioner. But it's, yeah, the SEC and the Big Ten already run college football, and it's only going to get worse to the point where they're going to be running the playoff.
Yeah.
And then the rest, it's kind of going to be just almost like pity invites to the rest of college football. So you can fight it all you want. It's his job. He's got to. But you're not going to do it. It's the SEC and the Big Ten. They run the show, even more so the SEC. And to your point with ESPN, you know, because of the money spent, it's like planning a wedding, and you want to decide who's going to be sitting at what tables and where. Who's coming to the wedding? And that's the ESPN.
I paid for the wedding.
Yeah, right. So I'm going to choose who's going to be there. And ESPN pays a lot of money for these games and these broadcast rights that they have a big say of who they want to be in the playoff for the best TV product. And a lot of times it's the SEC and the Big Ten. So.
And the other thing he said is we don't want to be a professional league because we're not a professional league. Except you are. You absolutely are. It's a pro.
It's 100% professional.
It's a professional league. It's like, well, we're not the NFL. We're not a pro league. Of course you are.
Yeah.
What do you call
you're
it?
You're not the NFL, but you're a professional league.
Yeah. Money talks, man.
I know. They've been moving too far in that direction of becoming professional while trying to fight that as well.
Yeah.
So, no, I commend Brett because I'm with him. I would prefer to have everyone involved and have the 5-11, but let's just be real.
It's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But keep fighting the good fight.
Mm-hmm.
You brought this next thing to my attention. Minor league baseball, in a minor league baseball game, there was a huge, we have the audio, we'll play it in just a moment. There was a huge bolt of lightning that cracked right above the stadium just as the pitcher was about to pitch. Everyone flinched, and the umpire
flinched.
And yet, that same ump is a real stickler. Here's the audio.
1-1, the count on Paulie. A huge crash of lightning as Contreras kicked, and it's a balk.
Wow.
They're going to call that a balk, and everybody jumped. Mother Nature gives Jacksonville a run. It's 2-1, and Norfolk is arguing the call, but I don't know how you could argue that. Unfortunately,
it's unfortunate timing. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Dude. Wow. I mean, that was a humongous roll of thunder, as if Zeus was throwing a thunderbolt.
The audio doesn't even do it justice when you see it. Like, it was like it landed clearly on the stadium somewhere because it flashed and sounded at the same time. And I don't even know that umpire, but I can tell you this. I hate him. I hate that umpire.
Yeah.
You know that. Can't you just call?
You could have said
dead ball.
Yeah.
Dead ball.
Let's do it again.
And let's do it again.
Yeah.
But he's like, well, you know what? That's actually a balk. The umpire came out of his shoes.
He is the rules. It's the rules guy.
Yes.
Like, come on, man.
Yeah. He's the guy that asked the teacher at the end of the class, like, oh, but you forgot to assign us homework. Nerd. Just let it go. Even he balked. Even he, the umpire, freaked out. Yeah, I don't like, because everybody stopped, right? Like, if only the pitcher was fazed by this, then I get it.
The batter fell out of the batter's box.
Yeah, and the runners weren't going anywhere either. They were all frightened, too. I know. Yeah. It's lame.
It was so funny because it's like, I mean, it was on their heads. It was like right there. And then after he kind of gathered himself, he started acting all tough, and he goes, balk. And he points to the third base. I was like, get the hell out of here.
Yeah, this is the problem. This is why people hate umpires. They take it too seriously.
Yes.
There's a difference between the law and kind of, you know, the letter of the
rule.
The spirit of the rule. That's right.
Yeah.
You don't actually give someone a ticket for jaywalking.
I will say this. The timing was uncanny. Like, the pitcher just lifted
his leg up.
Just pushed his arm back to start the pitch, and boom.
Yeah, that is frightening. Adrian Peterson, we talked about this. It happened here in Houston. He got into that fight while playing poker with a friend of his. And now, apparently, Baby Joe signed a contract to box Adrian Peterson. So they're turning this into like a celebrity boxing match.
What are we doing here, man?
Yeah, I'm out on this, man.
Baby Joe Castaneda has agreed to fight Adrian Peterson and signed the contract yesterday. Does he not realize he's going to get killed? I get it. He held his own and he was kind of backing up and sort of trying to defend himself. And he may have, I think he did land a punch or two on Adrian Peterson. Adrian Peterson was probably half drunk, you know, and he's going to get destroyed. It's like I was telling you guys before the show. I hope not only that the guarantee that he got is good, but real good, because he's gonna get destroyed.
I feel like they did this all wrong, man, because I will be interested in this if they didn't tell us, oh, we're friends, everything is fine.
Yeah. True.
Yeah.
If they just kept that a secret. And then now it's like, oh, they stepping in the ring. Yeah, I would be like, oh, okay. But they didn't said the whole story of them being friends for so many years and it's nothing to see here. Why would I want to see a boxing match now?
Yeah.
It's a good point. Mm-hmm. Imagine if Mike Tyson said, I'm going to raise your children instead of I'm going to eat your children. Nobody would want to watch that fight, right? We love the rivalries in this, that they actually want to seem like they want to kill each other in that ring.
Yeah. Yeah.
Adrian Peterson's always been hurting for money, so I get it. But yeah, I couldn't care less on this. It's pretty lame.
Mm-hmm.
Last thing on what's popping. The San Francisco Giants last night beat the Philadelphia Phillies on a walk-off. However, it was a walk-off inside the park home run. And it wasn't just one run. The Phillies are up 3-1. Bottom of the ninth, there was only one out, two guys on. And Patrick Bailey hit a ball to right center field. It made the most perfect bounce off the wall, this awkward bounce that got away from the outfielders. Inside the park home run. It's the first inside the park walk-off homer for a catcher since 1926, so almost 100 years. But is that the worst way to lose a game, where you're up two, one out in the bottom of the ninth, and you give up a three-run homer on a walk-off inside the park home run? I feel like that's a brutal loss for the Phillies.
Boy, that's on the list, isn't it?
Yeah.
Inside the park home run walk-off?
Yeah, I would say this is not as bad as the inside the park home run that happened on the, I guess, against the Rangers, where it was a little league inside the park, where they kept throwing the ball. They was just throwing the ball all over the field.
Yeah. That's true. That's worse.
It was like three errors. I think that one's worse than this one. This one was a fortunate bounce.
That would be worse.
Yeah.
That would be
worse. This one was a fortunate. It's still a bad loss, but it was a fortunate bounce that they couldn't have, done anything about that one.
Yeah.
That's true. That's the worst way to lose. Maybe like a wild pitch might even be worse too, to allow the winning run. Shoot, lightning crashes and they call a balk that allows the winning run to score. Yeah. That's probably worse.
I think that would be it.
The way the Guardians lost against the, I want to say the Tigers, they was up 1-0 in the bottom of the ninth with two outs. And whoever the catcher was, the ball went right through the five hole.
Yeah.
And the runner was on third, came home.
Yeah.
They ended up losing the game like 7-2 in extra innings.
That's a tough way to lose a game.
Two outs, man.
But yeah, that's the thing. Like, it wasn't just one run last night. You gave up a 3-run home run inside the park, home run. Just brutal. First time in 99 years it's happened for a catcher. And that's why they say every time you go to the ballpark, you'll see something new. That's what's popping here on In the Loop. When we come back, Kevin Durant was on LeBron's podcast with Steve Nash. You might have saw some of the clips. It was such a lengthy conversation. They actually did two episodes, and the second episode just dropped last night. We'll get to some of the interesting audio from Kevin Durant and how it applies now to his new team, the Houston Rockets. We'll do it next in the Loop.